Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Early Works, episode 4 of series 2. This is the show in which I ask famous performers and writers to read me the early creative writing of their adolescence. And today, as predicted by Bernie Sanders, I'm asking that of Amelia de Moldenberg. You may know Amelia from Chicken Shop Date or Don't Hate the Play As with an AZ at the end, or her new cooking program, which just began, which is on YouTube now. The first episode is with little known open mic comedian Ramesh Ranganathan. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Or you may know her from early work. This, that you're listening to right now, this podcast, she brought us stories of American high school movie level nemesis with all the same goals as her and more qualifications to reach those goals. A completely mapped out future for herself when she was like 9, a plethora of club memberships, incredibly precocious and judgmental reviews of Vogue magazines, and as is appropriate for someone who was in all the musicals, a list of her favourite things. And then I read out some rap lyrics in a pretty transparent attempt to try and get on Chicken Shop Date, which hasn't worked yet, but it could work if you keep the campaign alive. If you want to tweet Amelia and say you need to get famous poet and rapper Rhys James on Chicken Shop Date, then I think it's going to work eventually. I mean, it will be the least viewed Chicken Shop Date episode in history, but we've got to go for it, okay? These are the things you've got to go for. It's lockdown, people are getting desperate, let's do it. Anyway, here's the episode, enjoy. Joining me this week on another lockdown episode of Early Work is Amelia de Moldenberg. Hello, Amelia.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
For those of you who don't know, listeners, Amelia is probably best known for tweeting a photo of a list of her favourite things when she was 10 and then me replying asking her to come on Early Work. Would you agree that people stop you in the street and say that?
Hasn't happened yet, but...
Wow, but you've been in, you haven't been out.
It's lockdown, so I'm... Yeah. So yes, I would agree with that.
Pretty soon, people are going to be stopping you on the street saying, I saw that tweet, I saw that reply.
Yeah, or maybe they have and I just haven't been listening, you know? I've been having my headphones in and I just couldn't hear.
That'll be it, you're in a world of your own. Now, Amelia, if I had to guess what you're like at school, and I do because it's the first format point of this show, what I've written is, you've got very 90s kid vibe about you, and now... You look offended immediately.
No, I mean, I had to remember when I was born.
What I'm saying is I can picture you fully embracing it. So, like, I can picture you as a kid with, like, a snap bracelet, jelly sandals, leaning back in your inflatable chair, playing on your Game Boy. I can imagine you deadpanning the dance to Reach by S Club 7 and teaching it to a boy, but taking it quite seriously.
Oh, my God. Okay, stop. So, I'm triggered by this. Okay, wow, this is spot on.
Okay, oh, good. Okay, wait, there's more. Okay. Let's see how far we can get. I've put school vibe, I think relatively quiet for the first couple of years of secondary school, and then one day you said something back to a teacher and everyone was like, oh my days, Amelia is a savage, or the equivalent of that, because we didn't have savage at the time. So it would be more like, oi sir, you just got owned by Amelia, or pwned, that's what people did. So the sort of example I've got, and if this is accurate, this would be insane, but I've said is when when a teacher sees two people chatting and then goes, oi you two, stop flirting, like you'd have said, oi sir, stop watching. And then everyone would be like, oh, I'm here, out of
nowhere.
And then my final bit of guessing is that potentially you did a rap at a school disco. Is any of this in any way close?
Okay, so much of that is like uncomfortably close. So like, were you at school with me and I didn't know? The only boy in the girls' school that I went to? That is really close. S Club 7 were probably like my all-time favourite band ever. I have a photo.
Holy shit, I mean, what a perfect example for me to pick. I could have picked three other bands
yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly. You could have picked, at least S Club Juniors. But yeah, there was a picture of me and S Club 7, but like it was like a photo booth picture that were one of the like backgrounds of a photo booth. You could choose S Club 7. And so I'm there, like my head is just like popping out in them. And I used to show it to everyone being like, I met S Club 7, whereas I clearly didn't actually meet them.
Did anyone believe that? Did anyone? I can't imagine the CGI was that exceptional.
It actually kind of was. I feel like I should try and get the picture up and show you afterwards at some point. But yeah, it was, my head and their heads were the same size. And I think that's normally where you get it wrong, is that like someone's head is just way bigger. I also watched I have all of the VHS videos of S Club 7's TV show. Did you know that they started off as a TV show rather than as a band?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah.
So it was a TV show first,
but they were obviously in a band in the TV show. But like the TV show happened before like their singles were released.
Oh, so it was like a TV show about
a band,
fake band.
Yeah, and then the band became real, and that's S Club 7.
And then they were like,
"How great!" I didn't know.
Oh my god, that's great.
But yeah, I've got all of them, like S Club Miami, S Club LA, Viva S Club. So when they go to Spain, yeah, I was such a big fan. And then in terms of like the point about me being quite low key, year 7, year 8, very true. I had one friend, and then in year 10, that was when I really came into my own. And it genuinely was because we moved, in year 10, we'd moved classes, like you move sets. I think it's when you start your GCSEs. So I was in these new classes, all these different people, like the cool people for once. And then I feel like I genuinely said something back to someone and people realised that I was funny. And then
my life
changed from that moment on.
I knew it. How did I get that? You just had such a vibe about you. I could just imagine there being that moment where you kind of weren't even really paying that much attention. Someone said something to you. You just said something back that you thought was throwaway because you'd spent a couple of years, you know,
honing my craft. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, honing your craft, but also not being like this crazy vocal little shit.
No, not at all.
And then you just said something, 4 years worth of cutting barb in one line, and
I
then
know.
Everyone was like, where's that come from? And then you were elevated, lifted up on a chair, and everyone said, we need to keep you around.
It's mad how that can just change your school life. It's so, anyway, yeah, that's me, well done.
Well, but did you straight away thank you, well, did you do a rap in a school disco?
No, never did a rap
thing. Anything in remotely close to that, any kind of like assembly performance, like extracurricular performing that you didn't have to do?
Yeah, I mean, I was in like every musical, but I guess that's kind of, I signed up for that. That wasn't like a spur of the moment thing. That was very like planned, very much planned. I don't know if I did anything else other than that. Probably.
I just thought, because the logic of that was like I was following this train of thought, which was like you said something funny and then everyone was like, oh, she's funny. So now you had to be funny all the time.
Oh.
And then you don't want to like Bart Simpson it and be the I didn't do it kid where you're doing the same thing over and over again. And then everyone goes, oh, that's actually shit now. So then you had to up the ante by like, okay, you can't just do asides. You can't just do like cutting comments to teachers. You've got to come at it with like a skit or
one time, this is just a complete fluke, but also was incredible, was that we were on a history school trip and the teacher was being, you know, just really annoying and like shouting at everyone. And then they picked on me for some reason. And then they kept saying, she was like, Amelia, please take your scarf down. Like, we need to see your face, like remove your scarf from your face. And I was like, basically my scarf had got caught in my braces and I couldn't move my scarf away. And then it became this like massive thing that like, I was just so funny that I like purposefully got my scarf caught in my braces, but...
Oh, you played it off that everyone believed. You announced, had such a reputation for being funny. Everyone believed you'd gone full like Mr. Bean with it.
Yeah.
And you'd sacked off all the like funny lines and you'd just gone full slapstick.
Yeah.
But it was a complete accident.
Yeah.
Fuck, you had so much goodwill in the bank. People were willing to be on your side and say, she's just hilarious. Fuck, that's great. I never would have got away with that.
No, it was... I miss school so much. I honestly do. It was just such a great time. I honestly think, wow, what a time. What a time to be alive.
Well, you did also, you know, you were pretty ahead of the game with the face coverings.
Yeah, by forcing yourself, it's true,
to have a mask because of some braces. I mean, I'm not surprised you missed school if people were that respectful of you. Anyone else getting their scarf caught in their braces is over. You're done for.
It was so funny. I don't know why. It was just very funny moment.
Yeah. But you did all the musicals.
Oh, yes, I did all the musicals. So in year seven, I auditioned for Midsummer Night's Dream and I was only one of two year sevens that were... that got the part. So I was a fairy and loved it. Absolutely
loved it. I love how it's
it
would have been such a big deal to be one of the 2 year sevens.
Yes.
I mean, it's like getting like being a young player, getting an England call up when you're under 18 or whatever.
Exactly.
But
that.
The fact that you're still now talking about it like, well, I was actually one of the youngest people
well,
to
I
get.
I think it is a very good point. It's a point to make, I think. And you know what's even crazier is the head teacher, who was Mrs. Phillips, and she was terrifying. She coincidentally walked into my audition like during the time of the audition. She just was like walking around and she was like, oh, what's happening in this room? So she walks into the audition. I'm about to start singing some kind of like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star or something. And then she sits in on the audition and she clapped, and I think that's mainly why I got the part.
Oh, great. I can just imagine her, if you say she's scary, doing like a... Just wandering in with a slow clap, like, congratulations, you've passed. But, of course, then whoever was directing the musical, feels like they have no choice.
No. You know who's...
But to cast you.
She's, you know Sally Phillips, comedian?
Yeah.
That her mum is Miss Phillips, my head teacher.
Did everyone at school know who Sally Phillips was?
No, not really, because Smack the Pony was, like, a bit too early for, like, my generation, like, my friends. But obviously now I do. And I think everyone knew her from Bridget Jones.
Is that not, like, the most exciting thing in the world when there's someone related to a celebrity at school?
Yeah, but it's also, like, you have to know that celebrity.
So because
be
she wasn't... She wasn't in the collective consciousness. It just wasn't a big deal.
Which is a shame because she's a genius.
I went to school with some footballers' children.
Okay.
So I went to school with Lee Dixon's kids. And then Lee Dixon, the Arsenal defender, had a testimonial. And then his children were on the pitch. So they would have been like 9 and 11.
What does that mean, testimonial?
It's where, like, at the end of your career, they give you, like, they used to do this because footballers apparently didn't make enough money. So what they would do is, at the end of their career, to give them, like, a retirement package, they would do one big game where all these football legends they used to play with come and play this sort of friendly game, but sell out the stadium because it's everyone's, like, heroes.
Okay.
And then they get all the money. And it's like a... But now footballers make so much fucking money. I mean,
they
did then as well. Yeah, exactly. But then now the idea of doing a testimonial, it would be worth nothing to them. It'd be less than a week's wages to get those tickets. Sales. But they did that, and then so the excitement of seeing two people you went to school with on the pitch with like David Seaman and just hanging out, and then they got interviewed on Sky Sports as well.
That's pretty cool.
Okay, well, when you played that fairy, that was your first... Was that your acting debut?
No, I was in the Year Six Leaving Assembly, obviously, because the whole class was. But I had a main part there. And then I was also in primary school. I was in... I was Mary. I was Mary in the school nativity in reception.
Big part.
The biggest part. It's Mary's story at the end of the day. And then, yeah, I was always just wanting to be in the musical. So I auditioned for every musical, but I didn't get into all of them in secondary school. I was in Annie as an orphan, but I had a solo. I think I was like orphan 12 with solo.
Orphan 12 with solo. How many fucking solos were there?
No, there weren't that many. That's why I had to have the brackets with solo.
And is that because you were a really good singer?
No, not even. Basically, I did singing lessons in school and like alongside my studies. And I kind of got to a level where I was okay. And then in secondary school, I auditioned for the chamber choir, which is like the best choir that you have to like audition to get into. And I auditioned with my friend who is really good at singing. And so we both got in because I think her voice was like quite loud. And so you couldn't hear my voice in the audition. Anyway, the next term came up, we had to do auditions again. I auditioned on my own and I was cut from the choir. And it was really upsetting because it was one of those things where it's like they put the list on the door and just my name wasn't on there. So I got cut from that choir, but I was also in church choir. I was in basically every extracurricular thing possible to do.
Shit, I wrote that and deleted it from my guess about what you were like.
Yeah.
I thought that you were probably in all these clubs.
I was in every club because I was very average at like academic studies, but I was like above average at like the extracurricular.
So what other stuff? So musicals and singing lessons and choirs.
Singing lessons. In primary school, I did piano, but then gave that up because I think my mum was like, you've been doing this for 5 years and you still can't do anything. So it's just not for you. What else? Oh, I was in gospel choir for a moment.
Yeah, that suits you. If I were looking at you, I would say gospel choir.
I was in gospel choir for a moment, and then that didn't go to plan. what else was I in? I was in a club. I was in film club, and I made a short film about a man who owns a button shop.
Great. How old would you have been when you did that?
Probably like year 9.
Did you do that on
it was a solo endeavor, yes. The film got shown at the BFI and I remember like them critiquing my film afterwards and being like, I love like what you've done with like having the camera angle like be from below and like wonky. I love that. And I was like, it was meant to be straight, like that wasn't a stylistic choice. I thought that was straight. Yeah, what else? Honestly, the list is
endless. Well, do you remember the story? Do you remember what the plot was of the button shop?
There was definitely no plot. I feel like I've only learnt literally within the last year about like how plots and narratives work within film.
So it was literally just there's a man who works in a button shop.
Yeah, it was just like an interview. I go after school like every week and go and chat to him about the buttons.
Oh, it was a documentary?
Oh, sorry, yeah, it was a documentary.
Oh my God, here I am thinking that you've invented this button
shop. That is so much better. I also was part of a newspaper club, and I was also part of this other extracurricular club where we had to make a magazine. When I was in secondary school, my whole ambition was to be editor of Vogue. Like, that was like my number one thing that I genuinely thought that was on my trajectory.
Well, it was, but judging by what you're telling me, it was on your trajectory. You were in magazine club, you were in newspaper club, and you made button films.
Exactly, so there you go. But then obviously I've gone through a different path, but there's still time. There's still time.
People don't achieve a job like editor in Vogue until they're 47.
Exactly.
It would be insane for you to do that now. Well, what were you doing in newspaper club and magazine club?
Well, I was actually the editor of the newspaper club, basically.
Of course.
But what happened was we got to do, it was like a week-long thing. No, it was like a running up. Actually, I think it was over quite some time, but then it accumulated in us going to the Reuters, which is this big news organisation that like basically like have all the news and they like give it out to other people, I think. And we made this newspaper. We had like 2 days where we made it. I was the editor, so I was in charge of like what everyone was going to be writing about and like all of the way it looked and everything. And then basically after this first day, it was like 4 p.m. and I had the worst period pains of maybe my entire life. I went white like a ghost. I was projectile vomiting in the office and my mum had to come and get me, and I was in the fetal position in the toilet at the time. And so basically I was stripped from my role as editor and I didn't go back again.
The cutthroat world of journalism.
So the deputy editor had to stand in as editor and I was honestly so distraught. And I was just in bed with a hot water bottle, like just fucking being, this is being a woman, it's a fucking nightmare.
Well, I was going to say, was the deputy editor who stepped in a man?
No, luckily she is a woman, because I went to a girl's school.
Thank God, because the fucking metaphor that would have been.
That would have been
such a rude awakening to the sexist world of journalism you're about to go into. That's pretty cutthroat. That feels pretty horrible that you were so close to achieving your dream as a teenager.
And it was just taken away from me.
You were at the HQ of all news.
Yeah, I was there.
What a chance. And then it just all, fuck. And that was... So that was part of Newspaper Club?
Yeah, Newspaper Club.
And is Magazine Club a different thing?
Yeah, sorry. Magazine Club wasn't really actually Magazine Club. I just decided that I wanted to make a magazine. I was also then part of Jewelry Club. Jewelry Club, run by the DT department. And I remember making, you know, like those putty, squidgy stuff, you put it in an oven and it goes hard.
Sure, clay.
Okay, clay
in a kiln. Yeah,
you've heard of it, clay. So I remember making a necklace that was like a Vogue magazine, tiny Vogue magazine on a necklace.
Out of clay?
And I remember at the time...
Aren't necklaces famously sort of usually in the metal family?
No, it was a clay necklace with like a string around it. It was like...
Right.
Yeah. And I remember at the time making this Vogue clay necklace, and this girl called Izzy was sat next to me and she goes, "Oh, is that a Vogue magazine?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she was like, "Why have you done that?" And I was like, "Oh, because I want to be editor of Vogue. And she goes, "So do I."
Oh...
What? And I remember being like, duh, 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 and it was this massive moment of like, I can't believe this, that there is somebody else in my jewellery class that has the same ambitions as me. And I remember really getting so upset in my head, being like, no.
The most astonishing thing about that is that you didn't meet in Magazine Club.
No,
you met in Jewelry Club.
But I was like, this bitch, I can't believe she's trying to steal my fucking job.
So funny to have a rival, immediately had a nemesis. Were you then like pretty anti this Izzy girl for a while?
Yeah, and also she spoke fluent French, which is just such annoying, because obviously everyone knows Paris, the home of fashion. I was like, I can't believe it.
In the film of your school days, I mean, if I was watching an autobiographical film of your life and this happened, I would say, I do not believe that. That is exactly the enemy you would write for someone whose dream is to be editor of Vogue, is someone who speaks fluent French and also wants to be editor of Vogue, called Izzy.
And she's stunning. I'm actually friends...
Even being called Izzy in the thing, it would be pretty... It would be too on the nose, don't you think?
It would be. But I'm friends with her now, actually. And she's a sports agent, so good. Good riddance.
Wow. Different directions. Was she in Magazine Club?
No, she wasn't. She wasn't.
Well, what kind of ambition is that?
Exactly. So I'm saying.
Does she still... you're still friends. Does she still harbour any desires to be Vogue editor?
I don't think so. You know what? We're not close friends. I haven't spoken to her about it recently. Maybe I should bring it up.
Please do. And please record it and then send it for the edit of this.
Oh, God. But yeah, I was also...
That's so funny that you had a fucking...
Jewelry club.
Evil twin immediately.
Oh, yeah, in the evil twin. I also was... I also often worked at the Breakfast Club.
Sure, the popular eatery.
Yeah, the Breakfast Club, because basically my school didn't have a canteen. You had to bring your own packed lunch, which now I'm thinking about it was so annoying, actually, because a canteen would have made everything really easy. But yeah, so we had a Breakfast Club, though. So in the morning before school from 8 a.m., you could go to the Breakfast Club and you could get a Pop-Tart and a cup of tea. So I did work there.
Lovely.
And I also was a library assistant. I worked at the library.
I mean, when did you ever have free time to make a film about buttons? You're the busiest kid I've ever met in my life. This is ridiculous.
Every lunch, every break, I was in the clubs, and also after school I would be in the clubs too.
It's so funny that, I mean, okay. Now, when this clip is eventually taken out of context and used as the trailer for the episode, given that you spend a lot of time interviewing rappers and grime stars, given that you just said the sentence, every break, every lunch and after school, I was in the clubs, people are going to think you mean something else. And all it means is you were thinking about making clay necklaces of magazines and films about buttons.
Exactly.
I mean,
in the club.
Is it on brand?
Very much
that
so.
If you do a parody of 50 Cent, then this is where it goes.
Yeah, and me in the after school club.
You were pretty critical of Vogue magazines, is that right? Because you were so desperate to be editor. Did you basically edit them yourself?
Yeah, so I've actually bought it today. I had a scrapbook where I would cut out bits of Vogue. Like, I'll show you. Fucking, it's just falling apart. But I cut out bits of Vogue and write my thoughts.
Well, when you say thoughts, was it analysis of Vogue, or was it your versions of the article that would go with the picture?
No, it was my analysis of their work.
Because, really confident stuff.
Because as a 13-year-old, I obviously knew about fashion. And they needed to hear it, although they never heard it because it was for my own private journal.
Well, did you ever show this to Izzy and go,
no,
what
I didn't.
Legwork have you done to be editor of Vogue? I've already done it.
No, I didn't. I actually feel like it was quite private. I don't think I told many people about it. Or maybe I did.
Well, lucky for you, now you're going to tell the upwards of 10 listeners to this show.
Well, I'm trying to find something funny that's actually interesting to talk about.
Give us a page as an example so we can figure out what the fuck's going on.
Okay, so this is about a photo shoot called White Light White Heat. Okay. This is my comments. I think that this item did not benefit the magazine in any way. One word to describe this shoot: ugly.
Oh my god.
The clothes, the scene, and the model.
Wow, and the model.
And the model.
Out of nowhere.
Sorry, I haven't read this ever. I've never read this out loud. I haven't read it since I wrote it. If there is going to be nudity around the chest. I actually don't like where this is going. Get a model. I might have to redo this and say it again. Get a model that doesn't have a flat one.
Oh, wow. 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 I thought it was going there. I hoped it wasn't going there.
It's
very difficult for me to comment on that sort of thing in the current climate.
I can't believe it.
That is typically cutting of, of what I'd expect from the kid I predicted you were.
And it goes, and then to end it all, it goes underlined, just depressing.
Just depressing. Fucking hell. So now, correct me if I'm wrong, but on your show, you have a reputation of being a little bit no-nonsense and deadpan and not really taking any shit, and you don't fake laugh to any of your guests.
Sorry,
you don't make
yeah.
them feel overly comfortable. Now, this was clearly there all along. I mean, if anything, you're a toned down version of who you were as a kid.
I'm so sorry that I couldn't read that properly. I feel like I'm literally crying with laughter.
But that is exactly what. But the fact that you're going in with one word, ugly.
Ugly, exclamation point.
Not just the shoot, not just the clothes, but the model. The model who doesn't have a big enough chest.
No, the model's
to sustain.
Get a new model with bigger boobs, please. That's my inner monologue talking of me with literally just mosquito bites, being like, how dare they put someone with no boobs in Vogue? Disgusting.
Oh god. Does it continue like that? Are there more? Is it as typically cruel as that? I mean, it's quite Devil Wears Prada, really.
It is. This is more progressive of me. I really like this shoot because the model is not stick thin. Just the right shape for modelling. Well, I think. The clothes are wearable. However, there is an element of fantasy and fiction. Just the right mix. It is upkeeping with the trends. Another key element in this shoot is it is very simple. Not too many props to distract you from the clothes. Okay, that one's a bit more tame.
There we go, that's a bit nicer. Now, when you say fantasy and fiction, what do you, is that describing the outfit?
I don't know. Who knows?
What's the outfit?
Well, I don't know, because I didn't include any pictures of the outfits in this fucking scrapbook.
Oh, right,
I've just got the weird title page. Yeah, okay, let's have a look if there's anything else. Maybe my earlier ones. Oh, my favourite. Very good. She smiled, underlined. No other models smile. This shows that she is actually human.
Wow, it's really, I mean, you do, this is what it takes to be the editor of Vogue.
I mean, know. We've got here underscore boring.
Wow, yeah.
Boring in capital exclamation mark, underlined. What's with Vogue's obsession with enclosed studios and industrial sites? Cool nail varnish.
Well, it's, I mean, yeah, there's a, it's versatile. Okay. These reviews are pretty versatile.
Okay, I'm now going to show you. I've got the page of people who work there.
Okay.
And up here I've put future me.
Oh my god.
Future me, and that's an arrow to the editor's name.
My god.
And then look, it says here, maybe a start. And it's assistant to the editor. Oh, that's so cute.
Oh, I mean, it's very sweet. Future me pointing at, oh my god. I mean, did you have a vision board when you were this age?
Yes, but I've lost it and it's so annoying because I really want to find it again. But I had,
it can't have been that different to this,
no,
right?
No, I had a life plan. I had a life plan with like the years of what I would be doing.
So would you have just got, you presumably you start, according to that, assistant to the editor.
Yeah, and then I did actually go to Central St. Martin's for university, and I studied fashion journalism. That's a true story. And that is still because I did think that I wanted to work in fashion. But
When did you change your mind that you didn't want to be, or do you still want to be Vogue editor?
Well, no, I am interested in fashion, but and like fashion writing, obviously now the stuff that's in Vogue, actually the Vogue currently is brilliant. Edited by Edward Annenfeld, and like the stuff they have in there is so great. Like Marcus Rashford's on the cover at the moment. But like, yeah, I feel like when Chicken Shop Date started to get a bit more traction, actually not even when it got traction, I just realised that like I'm more interested in like in music and entertainment stuff rather than specifically fashion. Fashion can be very limiting, I think, as well. But yeah, it was always been a love of mine.
I mean, it's just so on brand. So much of it is exactly what the audience would expect of you to say. Boring with an exclamation
boring.
Mark.
Boring.
It's just like, I can just picture it as he makes some comment about chicken and then you go, this is boring, talk about music.
It's so like...
It's so on brand. You're just deadpanning. You deadpan the whole thing.
It's
it works.
So judgmental.
Except then, and then the little bit of vulnerability with future me, maybe a start on the other page.
It's honestly ridiculous. But I'm glad I did it. I'm happy I did it. But on the cover of the book, it says editor in waiting in like five different fonts.
Oh, yeah. It's so many different fonts.
From like Microsoft Word.
Oh my God. That's great. We'll have to put a picture of that up.
Yeah. My handwriting used to be so good. I feel like when you're at that age, because you're writing in school, class, every day, your writing is so neat. And now, when I write anything, it's a fucking shambles.
There's no need to write now. You know, editors, they're not handwriting anything.
Yeah, you've been writing this whole podcast episode.
I've been writing things down like, just depressing, one word, ugly. And I wrote the phrase, nudity around the chest. Which is how you chose to word that particular bit. White light, white heat. Not stick thin.
Yeah.
No other models smile. This model was smiling. Boring.
Boring.
Do we also have a copy of your list of your favourite things?
We do. Let me get it. So this was...
Now, what age were you when you did the Vogue scrapbook?
I was probably in 12, 13. So
right, and what age? And you were 10.
This list is before the scrapbook. Yeah, so this is...
Well, I'm fully expecting number one on this list to be Vogue magazine.
You're going to be disappointed.
Okay.
Okay, so it's called My Favourite Things, and then I have made a list of my favourite things. First on the list is Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Okay, fair enough. It's nice they get equal standing at number one.
As you know, I was a massive Mary-Kate and Ashley fan and still consider them to be a big inspiration for my life. Young and independent.
What are they up to? What are they up to now?
Well, they've got a fashion line called The Row, but I just mean more of like their lives when they were making movies, which was just like going to have a fun adventure and like getting a boyfriend after like one day, which is still what I aspire to do and just doesn't happen for me. So yes.
Sure, I mean, you set up a dating show.
I know.
So,
and it's not going very well. So yeah, Mary-Kate and Ashley, shout out to them if they're listening. Pepsi Max.
Were you obsessed with Pepsi Max, or is this a bit of a random thing to have on this list?
No, I love Pepsi Max. And I remember actually in school having still, like, this is before I went to secondary school, and I remember in secondary school before they went all healthy and got rid of all of the junk food from the vending machines, I would get a Pepsi Max in lunch break and go absolutely wild, like off the walls, insane.
What, in the library that you worked in?
In the library, returning the books, just like about 20 books an hour returning. Just
reading
on this
so fast.
Yeah, reading so fast.
Did you have a Pepsi Max pencil case?
No.
You know the one I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. No, I didn't have one. What did I have? I can't remember, but I remember like going to Ryman's being like one of the best times of my life. Picking out a new pencil case, a new fountain pen.
Yeah. I had the Walker's Crisps salt and vinegar pencil
case. That's so good.
Zipped up at the
that.
Side. It was pretty much the talk of the class for a week.
That's so good.
People were impressed, yeah.
I wonder what I had. I also remember being a thing, I don't know if you did this in your school, but you were allowed to cover your books, like your workbooks,
oh, yeah,
in like different like wrapping paper. And that was fun. And you'd have to like go and like decide what you're going to put on your book cover. Having your book covers.
It was supposed to, in our school, it was supposed to be sticky back plastic. That's the only, I swear,
yeah,
when
had
I was
sticky back plastic as well.
Don't you think when you were 13 you heard the phrase sticky back plastic said maybe 10 times a day, and I've not heard it as an adult once.
It's true.
Sticky back plastic was just said really fast all the time, and then people would come in with like shoddy versions of it where they've done it themselves, really good ones where their mum's done it, and then there would always be one boy who came in and it was in cling film.
No, we never had a cling film, but that is hilarious.
His name was
Shout out.
Unlucky mate. Birthday's April the 11th. You should sit next to him. Anyway, go on then. Pepsi Max.
Pepsi
What's
Max.
Next?
Oh, writing stories.
Well, I mean, what I find interesting about that is this is a podcast about early creative writing that people did, and you have not brought a story along for us to
no,
hear.
No, I haven't.
And yet your third favourite thing to do
is writing stories.
To write stories.
I found some in my mum's cupboard, and they were just so boring that I couldn't bring them on the show.
Okay.
They were just honestly dull, and I was like, at least my Vogue scrapbook is vaguely funny. Fourth, yeah, is acting.
That makes sense.
I didn't even do that much of it, but
you were in the musicals.
I was in the musicals, yeah, but I only had like small parts, but I always remember growing up wanting to be Keira Knightley.
God, you wanted, there's a lot of stuff you wanted to be.
Yeah, I wanted it all. Okay, next is swimming.
Good swimmer, got your badges.
I was actually in swim club, believe it or not.
Of course, sorry. How dare I question whether or not you... I bet you founded swim club.
No, I didn't actually, but I was in swim club, and I got in the swim team in year 7 because someone was ill and they had to pull out. So I was put on the team, and I did backstroke, and I finished last, and then also was in the relay, and we lost because of me being so slow. But anyway,
worth oh god, trying. But still, well, did it make your list before or after you had let everyone down?
Before I'd let everyone down, so it was when I still had
right
had some kind
hope
of hope
in your heart.
Yeah. Next on the list is king size cozy beds.
I say the word princess is thrown around a bit much, but that's insane. Specific, you have a specific size in your head.
It's because I didn't.
As a child.
It's because I.
Presumably, you're pretty small at this age.
Yeah. So a double bed is a king size bed for a child. But I had a single bed growing up, which is probably why I wanted a king size bed, because. Fuck single
it.
Beds.
I was the same, yeah. Big single bed for a long time, was furious about it. And if I made this list myself, you know what? I'm going to say writing stories, acting, king size cozy bed, and Mary Kate and Ashley might have featured on my own list
yes,
at this age.
Yes, I love that.
Pepsi Max would not have featured.
So I've got some more on the list. It's quite a long list. Next up is My Family.
The sitcom?
Yeah, so I was talking to my sister about this list recently, and she is convinced that it's the show and not our actual family. that are one of my favourite things, which I also believe.
It would still be, even if it was your family, they are still insultingly far down the list.
They're like lower third.
So it almost has to be the sitcom to make it, okay.
Then, and also,
were you a big fan of the sitcom My Family?
Yes, 100%. That was like one of my favourite shows growing up, which we'd watch as a family. And I loved it. And I think that it is this TV show, because the next one down is Rosemary and Thyme.
Remind me and the listeners of what that show is.
Oh, well, for those who don't know, it's a detective program about two gardeners. And they are both Miss Marple-esque detectives, like, as in they're always in situations where someone's murdered, and they always manage to figure out who did it, but yet they're not police.
So, are they, okay, and is it always a murder that takes place in a garden?
Pretty much. It's always to do with gardening.
So it's pretty, it's digging. It's ground force, dark.
It's ground force with death, yeah.
Was it a kid-friendly show?
No, but I was really into detective programs growing up. Like, very right. much so. Like, a lot of the stuff that I shouldn't be watching, I was there watching it. I also was obsessed with CSI growing up, and I actually had a subscription to CSI magazine, which...
I mean, of course you did. You can't be a magazine club without subscribing to CSI magazine.
which would give you, every 2 weeks, you'd get a DVD along with the magazine with two episodes of CSI. And basically one day I wrote an incredibly detailed plan of how to get away with murder. And I showed it to my mum, and she cancelled my subscription to CSI magazine. And I was distraught.
Yeah, I mean that's the absolute least your mum should have done in that case.
Yeah, I was like...
I mean, it's her only reaction.
I remember
you're
it now.
You're literally saying, here's how to get away with murder. And rather than, you know, taking you to see a psychiatrist or getting rid of every knife in the house, you've just gone, right, no more magazines. You can still watch Rosemary and Thyme, do what you want, but...
No more CSI for you.
Well, okay, it now comes to the time where I have to score your work on three different categories. Those categories are originality, pure teen horniness, and Mickey Mouse Club. Yeah, I mean, you haven't really said anything that would be relevant to that. Actually, no, that's not true. So, originality, pure teen horniness, and Mickey Mouse Club / Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score. The aforementioned, how close is it to your work now? Does it show the potential of a future star? Now, originality, I've never heard of a necklace made of clay. So, you're going to have to score pretty high on the jewellery front, minimum. Plus, I don't think anyone at age 13 is... reviewing a magazine quite the cutting way that you were, calling it boring. So, and some of the things on your favorites list you'd expect, but some from like a kid, but there are some like My Family and Rosemary and Thyme and CSI magazine that are just pretty fucking random. So originality, I'm gonna go for a 4 out of 5.
Oh my god, yay.
And then we come to pure teen horniness. Now look, it's some of the least horny stuff I've ever heard in my life. But you do go in quite heavy on whether or not this model needs to have bigger boobs. I would argue that's a pretty, whether it was coming from a horny angle or not, subject matter wise, it's a pretty horny way to go when you're just reviewing an article. So I'm going to go, given that the rest of it isn't, I mean, you do, yeah, you're talking about the model being ugly and not having boobs, and you're depressed. You're depressed by that fact.
I am depressed. I think I actually should actually score very high on this new category of yours, which is misogyny.
Well, we can't do that because otherwise all the episodes are unbroadcastable.
A
lot of people's early work. It's from a different era. It's from a different time. And everyone's a teenager coming to terms with equality. So I will go for a 3 out of 5 for pure teen horniness. Mickey Mouse Club, I mean, how close is it to your work now? Does it show potential of a future star? I mean, absolutely it does. The cutting barbs that you do throughout. I mean, it's brutal. It's savage. So I've got to go 5 out of 5.
Wow.
One word, ugly, boring, just depressing. Things
underlined.
I can imagine you saying on a chicken shop date right now. So that gives you a total score of 12 out of 15, which is an extremely impressive score. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Is that the highest score?
I mean, do you want me to say yes? The answer isn't yes.
Oh,
but
damn it.
One person on this show has once got a 15 out of 15, and that person is me, because you have to score me in a minute and I have to do my work. So now I'll read you some of my work. The bit I've chosen to read you is specifically because you interview a lot of rappers, and I found a thing, a document on my laptop called Some Rap Shit from when I was 16.
Okay.
So these are, I believe, some lyrics from when I was 16.
I can't wait.
For like nothing. It's not for anything. It's not very long, but here we go. Here I am. I'm back where I began. Pick my drawing board out of the bin for a new plan. Because I tried this before and nothing happened but soul-destroying, grief-deploying ache that made me fall to the floor. And then suddenly, 4 years later, when I'm another me, this girl from my old world comes running over and she's hugging me. And I can see I'm sinking back into the sea I nearly drowned in. In this war, I can't see our men. I feel surrounded. It's me on my own and I can't keep afloat, because when she puts her hair up, it shoots a hole in my boat. So now I'm treading water, trying to keep my head above the waves, and then she sends me a text with an extra X and I'm saved.
That was incredible. I love that.
A lovely bit of old rap from
that
a 16-year-old me.
That was actually so good.
Yeah, you think I got bars?
Yeah, literally.
Can I be on Chicken Shop Date now?
No, absolutely not. Oh. But it was so... That was really good.
Do you think there's flow? Was there flow?
It's conscious rap, I think.
What is that style of rap?
It's like Lorcana vibe. I'm not comparing that to Lorcana, by the way.
Why, thank you. Finally, someone comes on here and says it and is an expert.
But it's... Yeah, it's like you're thinking about the world.
Okay. I mean, there's lines in there that I definitely like. As a 16-year-old, to say, a girl from my old world comes running over. It's like, well, I don't have an old world.
Yeah, I know, but we don't know that.
I clearly was into ponytails, because I said when she puts her hair up,
yeah,
it shoots
a
hole in my boat.
Yeah, I like that line in the boat. I like the water theme as well. I would say it's quite depressing.
Yeah, that's very much that sort of, yeah, that would be my vibe.
It was. Were you depressed? Were you sad as a child?
If you were reviewing it, would you say just depressing?
Yes,
with
I
an
would.
Exclamation mark
that,
underlined.
That rap was just depressing, but it was impressive and depressing.
Well, I need your scores for the rap. So the first one is originality out of 5.
Okay, out of 5, I'm going to go with a 4, because I really do feel like some of the words you used and some of the... I think it was interesting, like the water and the ship and the boat, and I liked it.
Thank you very much. What about pure teen horniness?
Well, yeah, you were talking about a girl, so for that reason, I feel like it was actually very horny. And you need to... It's pretty horny,
yeah.
You're quite cut up about her, really, it sounded like. So I'm going to say 5.
Yeah, fair enough. I deserve that. And then the last one, Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Gooscore. How close is it to my work now? Does it show the potential of a future star? Do you see a similar vibe?
I wouldn't... I mean, I don't know. Do you rap now?
Not really. I don't find myself rapping very often.
Okay. Well, I think the writing is good. But as you're not really into the whole rap game at the moment, I would say...
thank you for qualifying that with at the moment, because you never know.
You never know, though. You never know. I think maybe a 2.
Okay. I think that's fair.
But that's also a tactical, so that I get a better score than you.
Yeah, I did think that. It is 11. I mean, that does take the piss a little bit.
So, but I'm going to stick to it.
That's the kind of ruthless nature you need to be editor of Vogue. You just will do anything to win, whatever it takes, regardless of what Ryan Gosling, Ryan Gooscore I deserve for that. You're just giving it a fucking 2. And that is, it's your fault in the first place, because you went too high with the horny score. But I do appreciate it. I mean, the reading you a rap was literally entirely just a bid to be invited onto Chicken Shop Date.
Oh, well, I appreciate the effort.
But you have... So I have to achieve more than that, do I?
Yeah, just a bit.
What's the minimum requirement?
You could win a mobo.
I'll try my best. Well, all right. That means that with a score of 12 to playing against my score of 11 out of 15, you do win the episode.
Yay!
But, as ever with early work, the message of the show is we are both losers.
Oh.
There are no winners here. It now comes the time for you to play us out with one final piece. Now, I think what I would like to hear, if you wouldn't mind, is a dramatic reading of your favourite things. Because it'll give a real challenge to our music department and our sound effects department to see how they're going to score things like Pepsi Max and swimming.
I just say I'm nervous.
Good. That's what I like to hear. Nerves are good.
Okay. My favourite things. Mary-Kate and Ashley. Pepsi Max. Writing stories. Acting. Swimming. King-size cosy beds. Sky Plus box. My family. Rosemary and Thyme TV. Zion Park. London. Disneyland. Manchester. UMT underscore. Dolphins. And Harrods.
There it was, Amelia de Moldenberg's favourite things with a dramatic backing. That could be a rap easily. She's going to have to interview herself soon. I mean, that's going to be pretty dry. That's going to be the driest act. I don't know if I could handle that level of dryness. I'm very disappointed, by the way, that at the time I didn't pick up on the fact that Amelia was in every club going, as she mentioned, and her favourite band that she was obsessed with was S Club 7. God damn it. I'm so out of practice. I'm rusty. We're in a pandemic. I don't have the sharpness from live comedy. If I was gigging loads at the moment, trust me, I'd have been right on that. I'd have been straight on that. I'd been like, oh, you like clubs, do you? Well, how many clubs are you a member of? Seven. Like the band you like, S Club 7. And then everyone, you'd have all clapped and you'd have cheered as you listened to this on, on your Walkmans. You'd have gone mental. Mickey Mouse Club as well. Fuck. Christ, I would like to issue an official statement formally apologising for this negligence on my part. But as ever, regardless of that, I would like to encourage you to subscribe, to leave us a review, and I'd like to recommend another podcast, actually. I'd like to, but I can't, because they're all rubbish. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.